Hello there. You're tuning in to the 92nd episode of the Audible Weed Walk. This is Nina welcoming you. As promised, I am back to you with another bite of the big picture topic that I discuss with you regarding wild food fairness. And this is a part 5 of the same. If you're interested in catching up part 1 to 4, here is where you can find them. Part 1, episode number 76. Part 2 is episode number 80. Part 3 in episode number 83. And part 4, episode number 87. And this is part 5, episode number 92. You can find them on Orville Radio website. And if you are subscribed to my YouTube channel, Edible Weed Walk, you can find them in the video link. A few days back, an old associate now working in UK on policy issues wrote this as a very exciting note. She wrote, and I quote, "Excited to announce that Food and Land Use Coalition is a co-host of the first ever Food System Pavilion at COP27. What is COP27? It is a conference of parties, which pretty much all countries are signatories, who are committed to climate change, climate action. If you want a few more details on these international bodies and their actions related to environment and food, catch my podcast called Earth Day, Earth Action, Earth Food, episode number 97. What does this mean? This associate writes, we are bringing food and land use to the heart of the climate conference. We will focus on actions, strategies, and solutions that have the potential to drive the transformation towards healthier, more sustainable, and more equitable food system." That is lofty and wonderful. What she is talking about is, for the first time, there will be a food system pavilion at the UN Climate Change Conference, which they believe will at least put food at the center stage during the crucial negotiation. Now, this COP27 is going to be held in Egypt in November. The people who are working on this are naturally very excited. And one can see that the opportunity is huge. I'm a little surprised though, you know, this is COP27 and it took 27th COP to actually think of including the food system in discussing climate action. That's, you know, I think that's also huge realization. However, the last paragraph in that information made me wonder. It says, "Transforming the world's food system could generate $4.5 trillion annually in a new economic opportunity by 2030 and help us create a net zero, nature positive world while also ensuring social justice and food security." While finance is an important part of decision making, and I can also see social justice and food security tagged into the same sentence, still, the fixation on food as a very lucrative commodity in terms of money to be made, and it seems to be that trend seems to be lingering. Maybe I'm too much of a skeptic. Sometime back, I had heard an interview with Dr. Debal Deb and read up on the issue of GM food and offered an episode, a podcast, No Need for GM. It's episode number 42. When fortified food was offered as an option and not as an imposition, experts got together, ranging from scientists to grassroots level workers and farmers themselves, in a very informative webinar They categorically rejected the need for GM or fortified food. You can find out the details in episode number 42 that I just mentioned, but among others, just like Monsanto and Cargill and other multinational seed companies took away the basic right of farmers to save and sow seed by making the seeds themselves unviable, GM food takes away the right and control over one's food. Fortified food is a highly processed food, stripped of the benefit of the whole grain. Fortification cannot be done in small mom-and-pop mills. Only large companies and food industries can do so. So food becomes an industrial product completely. Plus, it disregards and therefore discourages the very nutritious vitamin and nutrient-rich local and wild weedy food that I and others have been talking about. All these does another thing. It narrows down the production and food options, making food less diverse and not more. I'm sure all of you are aware the supply of fortified rice in a midday meal in a government-run school to curb anemia, which was opposed by the civil society group, saying that it will have adverse health impact, but was ignored, have caused much misery to the children of Bolangir district of Orissa. Primarily, it's a tribal area. So it gets into another dimension of experimenting on some of the most vulnerable population. That's also very disturbing. As we know, the thumb rule of checking if something is truly sustainable and contributes to the health and well-being of our planet, how it encourages and includes diversity, any system that by nature reduces and eliminates diversity, unless it is in a hospital for treatment, is trouble. So a system is as good as the diversity it can embrace. Why trouble? In a recent webinar I had participated, a participant from Jordan mentioned that it had 14,000 variety of wheats historically. Jordan, you know, that whole area, as you know, is a center for diversity for wheat. So they had about 14,000 varieties of wheat. Currently, they grow only 4 to 5 varieties and depend nearly 90% on import. This is how skewed food can get when it is treated as business alone. I had done a podcast called Diet Basics, KISS Technique, Celebrating Diversity. This is episode number 81. Check it out on the various diet plan. If you ponder on the topic, you will realize that as adults, we need very little amount of grains in terms of carbohydrate. Grains, processed and unhealthy grains in various forms. Added with that, another trouble food, sugar, is offered to us. Not just most of the food businesses are grain-based. They are based on very few varieties of each. Again, not encouraging diversity. Could we not, for our own limited grain requirement, depend on the local varieties, hardy millets and tubers? The number of tubers Africa can grow is astounding, and they have to depend on grain imports. The same can be talked about the tribal areas within India. They have an amazing number of tubers that they can depend on. Of course, they also grow many of the millets. And why bring them into, the regular food system of fortified food, that even processed and fortified? But it all brings me to the question, how you and I, as conscious consumers, make our food system more sustainable for us and the planet. Sure, If you are listening to this podcast, you are not one of the children or their parents in the Bolangir. We, that is you and I, are primarily consumers, despite our growing areas, our yards, and some pretty well-designed sustainable permaculture farms that some of us have. Something's disturbing appeared some time ago. Seasonally, I often see an advertisement about food festivals focusing on one single food, say palm. How to use it in different ways. The palm fruit, that is. In Tamil Nadu, this wild food is eaten primarily when it is young, and then after the seeds from the ripe fruit sprouts. They are boiled with salt and make a lovely snack. The whole of eastern India, thal as it known as, is a very popular, not only when it is young, but when it is ripe. The kernel in the seed are also eaten. However, the sprouts are not so popular. In Tamil Nadu, palm trees are protected. That's because Asian Palmyra palm, Borassus flabellifere, is getting cleared. The palms have separate male and female trees, and it takes a very long time, almost like 15 years, to decide which one is what. They are being cleared as urbanization is expanding. But since they are quite common elsewhere, it is not protected everywhere. A single palm produces many fruits, so having a festival of palm fruits or a food made out of palm fruits doesn't, seems like a good thing. But then, what I read recently is a festival of Mahua, Madhuka longifolia. Now, if this festival was organized close to a tribal area or for a seasonal boost in the tribal economy or in the nearby town so as not to disturb the tribal area but to make good use of the logistics in the nearby town, I could have understood. But to hold this festival in a metro city is sacrilegious, profane actually. Couldn't really come to use a milder word. Terrible. And people without thinking are commenting on how great it is. Come on, guys. Mohua is one of the central identity that the tribal people hold on, the tribal people hold on to across the country. Apart from being an icon of tribal identity, they are also a great source of nutrition, which we are stealing by making it a commodity. Not an artisanal commodity that a tribal person makes at home and sell themselves to the consumer at a nearby hut directly. Hut is, if you don't know, if you are unfamiliar, hut refers to a local bazaar. This induces... This new form of marketing induces middlemen, us, in the garb of selling sustainable artisanal products with fancy packaging that comes to the cities online, gets shipped and reaches our door, and now in this whole food festival. Can we, should we support this? If we do, are we different from the food businesses that diminishes a center of wheat diversity to primarily an importer? So it is not about just food. In making our choices as a consumer, we need to think a lot more than just food packaged and brought in front of us. Let's think about it. I'm open to ideas if you think we can and should support a Mahua Mela in a metro city. Let's take a pause. Write to me at edibleweedwalk@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. That ends part 5 of the Wild Food Fairness Bite. I will see you next week. Stay well and stay safe.
This is Oroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.